Hello, humans, and welcome back to the Meditative Aiden podcast, where we talk about mindfulness and how it can help you work through the challenges and experiences of everyday life. My name is Aiden, and this is episode number 10, titled, Can Mindfulness Help with Addiction? And in today's episode, we're going to be talking, everything's going to revolve around addiction and how mindfulness relates to addiction and how mindfulness can help out with that. First, we're going to take a look at, you know, what addiction really is, and I'm going to illustrate that through a personal example. Then we're going to go through and talk about some of the different components of addiction, what causes it, where does it come from, what characterizes it. And then I'm going to give you a practical tool for helping you work through cravings that are associated with addiction called urge surfing. So without any further ado, let's get to it. So I want to preface today's episode just by saying that I have done an enormous amount of study trying to make sure that I'm delivering the right information and the right content to you guys. You know, I don't want to talk about addiction without having a solid understanding of what it is and how it is implicated in a lot of different things and how we can work through it as well. I also need to let you know that, you know, as a disclaimer, what I talk about isn't a substitute for professional help with addiction, but more it serves more as a tool to help you work through the challenges you face and can supplement any treatments that you receive. I also want to say that a lot of the advice that I offer here and a lot of the different things that I talk about are things that I've used personally to help me work through some of the challenges I faced with addiction. And for me, that there's been an enormous benefit, and I hope you find a similar benefit in the mindful practice of coping with addiction as well. So as we get started here, we need to talk about what addiction really is, because a lot of times, you know, when I was a kid, I would say that, I was addicted to this, that, or the other, and, you know, just kind of misusing the term for what it really meant. And there's a strong distinction between just misusing something and actually being addicted to it. And addiction is characterized by an uncontrollable urge and desire to consume some substance, thing, event, practice, or otherwise. Now, the manual that psychologists use to diagnose addiction is called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. The most recent edition is called the DSM-5. And primarily what they focus on in that is, one, are you consuming it without the ability to stop? And second, are you consuming it regardless of the psychological and physical consequences associated with that? So what this means is that if you are consuming something in large amounts or even small amounts while consciously recognizing that it's harmful for you, that's addiction. You know, it's kind of this, you have to have this thing in order to feel good. And this contrasts to misuse, which is just using something occasionally. So, for example, an addiction to shopping would be constantly shopping all the time, even though you don't have the money in your account to pay for what you're shopping for, versus, you know, just shopping a little too much, but without this psychological need to do so. And I want to illustrate this through a personal example of addiction that I faced while I was in high school. So during my time in high school, I was overloaded with a lot of different things. I was working as a custodian at the school every day after classes ended for 4 hours. I was volunteering in extracurricular activities. I was performing in sports. And on top of that, I had a really difficult course load. I was taking a lot of really difficult classes. And all of these different commitments kind of stretched me out a little too thin. I was stressed all the time, and I wasn't getting as much sleep as I needed to because I was staying up so late to finish all of my different things. And eventually, you know, I was tired, I was stressed. It was a recipe for addiction. And growing up in my parents' house throughout my childhood, there had always been soda around, you know, caffeinated soda. And, you know, I drank this from a young age. I really liked the way that the soda tasted. I liked the bubbly feeling, and I actually liked the little zing of energy that caffeine gave me. And this early consumption of caffeine is what primed me for addiction to it later on. Because over time, as the stresses built, as I became more tired, I started to realize that caffeine would give me the energy I needed to complete all the tasks I needed to. And it would also make me feel relatively relaxed. And apparently this feeling of relaxation with caffeine is actually pretty common for people with ADD. So nonetheless, and as the school year continued, as I progressed towards my senior year, I started drinking more and more and more caffeine. I would drink it, you know, in the morning to wake up, and I would drink it throughout the day to keep me awake, and then I would drink it at night throughout all of my different commitments at the time. And eventually it got to a point where I was able to buy a 12-pack of Diet Coke and go through the entire thing in one day. And there were even a few instances I remember where I would stay up at night, I would buy a 12-pack and drink the whole thing in a matter of hours, only to be able to fall asleep like an hour or two later. And it got to this point where there probably wasn't a waking hour of my day where caffeine wasn't in my system. And I realized how much caffeine was coming to control me when we actually ran out at my parents' house at one point. And I was wandering around the house trying to figure out what to do. I started getting anxious and frustrated. I was a little irritated. And eventually it got to a point, you know, I was looking for anything to give me the boost that I needed. So I hopped in my car, I drove down to the gas station, grabbed a few drinks to perk me up, and then drank almost half of them just on the way home. And it was this experience, as I look back, and at the time as I looked at it, I realized, holy crap, like, this is something that's a little more serious than I think it is. This is something that, you know, it's I'm spending my time trying to go after this to feel good. This consumption of caffeine in this way actually continued through my college years, and it was just something that I always needed with me at all times. I would, as I started college, I would go to and from class with at least one caffeinated soda in my backpack to make sure that I was ready for whatever came up. And as I look back, I realize that the reason I was doing this was to cope with these difficult experiences that I was having. On the one hand, you know, I was exhausted and stressed, and caffeine gave me the boost that I needed to help me kind of alleviate that feeling. On top of that, when feelings of depression would come up as well, because caffeine gave me that relaxed perk, it was something that I consumed whenever that sensation would start to arise. As soon as I felt that stress or tiredness or depression, I would immediately go to it as a solution because I knew it would perk me up. So primarily, I was trying to cope with these experiences. And this is something that's especially dangerous in our modern world because we are constantly overworked. We're constantly stretched too thin and stressed. And this primes us for these kinds of tendencies towards addiction. And what happens in these situations is this addiction hijacks the natural reward system in our brain. And the way that this, you know, natural reward system worked, it's easiest to describe if we go back to the time of, you know, our evolutionary ancestors. Now, when our ancestors would go and find something that was, you know, sugary and fatty and eat it, the brain would naturally dump a certain amount of dopamine into their brain to say, hey, that will keep us alive. That is something that we need to keep eating. So here's a little, you know, feel-good sensation for doing that. This was a good thing at the time because it encouraged our ancestors to go and seek those things so that they could survive. And that's what this dopamine-based system kind of works off of, is rewarding us for experiences that will keep us alive. And this is where the entire process, or most of the process of addiction occurs, is in those parts of the brain that involve that chemical dopamine. And so addiction occurs when that process, that system, is hijacked into believing that we constantly need something to survive. It's our body telling us, I need this and you need this so that we can continue to feel good and stay alive. And often we get addicted to that sense of feeling good and that the peace that brings, if you will. Now, I'm not an expert at addiction, so don't take all of that, you know, at face value, but I do want to offer some statistics to give you an idea of the rate of addiction across the world. And the thing is that addiction really is a global problem because, for example, the Addiction Center estimates that almost 21 million Americans have at least one addiction. And similarly, the European Monitoring Center for Drugs and Drug Addiction suggests that 3.7 million people in the United Kingdom suffer from problematic drug use, and one out of every 10 people in Ireland, aged 15 to 64, have ingested addictive and illegal substances just last year. Now, these statistics don't include every possible addiction, which, I mean, these statistics just include, like, hard substances, but it doesn't include addictions to video games, to cell phones, to the internet, to shopping, and even exercise. But the question that we have to ask here is, how can mindfulness help with this? Is there really a way that mindfulness can help with addiction, something that is chemically based in our brain? And we have to start answering this question by first recognizing that addiction can be narrowed down really to two main factors. There are two things that really underlie all addictions. And the first one is that addiction occurs as we try to avoid or get away from experiences. For example, this was me with my caffeine addiction in relation to stress and that sense of tiredness and depression, and I was using it to get away from those experiences and those feelings. The second thing is that addiction causes changes in parts of our brain that use dopamine. So if addiction can be helped with mindfulness, it has to address both of those parts, as far as I understand. So one of the first things that I want to mention to that end is that there have been several studies that have been conducted to see how mindfulness affects addiction. And in these studies, they would take participants, whether they were at a recovery center or dealing with, you know, narcotic recovery at a methadone clinic, and on top of whatever else they were going through, whatever classes they were taking, whatever programs they were involved in, they sprinkled in a little bit of mindful practice. And these studies showed that the people that were involved in these mindfulness practices actually were able to have a healthier recovery and adopt healthier mindsets towards their addiction and working with it. In addition, another study was actually conducted where the researchers wanted to test how well mindfulness practices and training could help people recover from nicotine addiction. And the thing is that we know that nicotine is a super, super addictive chemical, and it's a really difficult addiction to beat. Now, one of the most prevalent methods right now for treating nicotine addiction is using nicotine patches, which people will wear in a decreasing dose over time to help reduce the amount of nicotine that they need to eventually wean them off of it. And what these researchers found is that when mindfulness practices were used, they were actually more effective than these nicotine patches for treating nicotine addiction, and more effective in producing recovery and relapse prevention as well. But it's one thing to talk about these situations and make these conclusions, and another to actually look at the science behind it. And so I wanted to look into a little bit of research that helped me understand exactly where these changes are occurring in the brain, and if there are any. And what I found is a large amount of research that shows that when mindfulness practices are used and developed, it helps reorient the focus of your brain. It helps redirect the activity of your brain from parts that are more impulsive and these craving parts, and redirects that energy to increase the control that you have over that. So, more specifically, what these researchers found involves activity in the front part of your brain called the prefrontal cortex. And this part of the brain is involved with decision making and things like that, as you might be aware of. And what they found, you know, there are a few different parts to the prefrontal cortex. And these researchers found a shift in activity from the part of the prefrontal cortex that's involved in these, you know, maladaptive behaviors and these cravings over to the other side, the other component of the prefrontal cortex that's involved with stronger decision making and less impulsive behavior. So all of this research that I've just mentioned shows that mindfulness practices, one, enhance different therapies and even outperform different therapies when it comes to addiction. And second, these mindfulness practices also change the activity in your brain, which has been evidenced through numerous, you know, brain scans and different studies and things like that. Now, to explain why this works, we need to take a look at a therapy called mindfulness-based relapse prevention. And this is a therapy that was actually produced specifically to aid in the recovery of addiction through the use of mindfulness practices. And the creators of mindfulness-based relapse prevention state that mindfulness cultivates change in addictive behaviors by, one, developing awareness of personal triggers and habitual reactions and learning ways to create a pause in this seemingly automatic process, two, changing our relationship to discomfort, learning to recognize challenging emotional and physical experiences and responding to them in skillful ways, three, fostering a non-judgmental, compassionate approach towards ourselves and our experiences, and four, building a lifestyle that supports both mindfulness practice and recovery. So, as we mentioned before, mindfulness has to hit on two core elements of addiction in order to really be a viable option for growth through addiction to overcome it. And the first element there is the ability to work through experiences and, you know, be able to overcome our need to run away from experiences. And this is what MBRP really focuses on, is what can we do to prevent ourselves from feeling like we have to run away from an experience. And all of the previous research that we just discussed goes over that second component of, you know, being able to change the dopamine systems that are being hijacked. So what mindfulness-based relapse prevention has to say about this first component and dealing with it is that usually when we experience addiction, we're trying to get away from a different experience. We're trying to get away from something unpleasant that we just don't want to feel. And rather than running away from it and pursuing something to make us feel better, mindfulness practices teach us how to lean into that experience and practically go the opposite direction. What this means is that when these experiences arise, instead of trying to seek something to make us feel better, to avoid the experience, we're leaning into it to learn where it's coming from, how it feels, and really just experiencing it without that sense of judgment. And the reason that that's so important is because typically when these cravings arise, and this is me speaking from personal experience here, is, you know, when these experiences arise, it's easy to judge them as bad. When I was struggling through this early caffeine addiction, one of the primary challenges I faced is that when I would feel tired or these different sensations would come up, I was trying to get away from that to feel better. And that's what mindfulness teaches us not to do. It teaches us instead how to lean into the experience and experience it non-judgmentally. So that when that craving for caffeine arises because I'm tired, I'll experience the tiredness and try to understand where it's coming from. Because usually that experience arises, and in the past I would judge it saying, oh, I'm tired, that's bad. I can't feel tired. I have too much to do. And mindfulness teaches us how to counter these judgments, how to let go of them and stop perceiving these things in a way that's judgmental. Because as I said before again, those judgments are what drive us to run away from that experience. There's plenty more to say about this, but fundamentally, mindfulness works in helping work through addiction and overcome the challenges of addiction by teaching us how to relate differently to the experiences that arise within us to prevent us from running, while also, as research has shown, changing the brain structures involved in decision making and these impulsive behaviors and so on. So with all of that in mind, I want to give you a practice that's based in mindfulness that's actually been developed specifically for working through the cravings that come up with addiction. And this process, this practice, is called urge surfing. Now, the best way to use this practice is to imagine that these cravings, these addictive cravings, when they arise, they're kind of like waves. You know, they slowly build up over time, you feel that desire, that need to have that thing that makes you feel good. And then it reaches a crescendo when it feels like you have to have it at that moment. That's the crest of the wave. And then over time, that wave eventually subsides. So what urge surfing teaches us to do is experience these cravings kind of like that wave, and to be mindfully present as it arises, as it reaches that crest, and then as it subsides. So to practice urge surfing, you kind of have to pretend that you're a surfer on the waves of craving. And when these cravings come up, you allow yourself to just observe them and just see where they're going. You know, it's going to feel uncomfortable. It's going to feel weird because some cravings are, you know, really small and others are like tidal waves. And instead of, you know, allowing yourself to judge those experiences, you just let go and allow yourself to observe them. And at this point, I want to read an excerpt from a clinician's guide on how to use urge surfing. And what it says is, first, notice how the cravings and urges are like waves. They rise, they crest, and then they fall. This pattern continues. Stay with the experience. Observe the waves. Even though you are not reacting, the cravings and urges fall. They subside. They may rise again and subside again. You are like a surfer riding the waves. You may enjoy the freedom of observing without the need to react. Some cravings and urges are more intense than others. Some are like small waves and others are like ocean or tidal waves. Notice that you can be present and not react, that you can experience cravings and urges and not react. Now, this is a practice that I really love, and I found it to be really powerful in helping me work through a lot of the different cravings and urges that I have. And if you want a little more in-depth study of this, if you want something a little more concise, I really encourage you to go onto the Meditative Aiden website and check out the blog post, "Can Mindfulness Help with Addiction?" And on that post, I've got the full urge surfing process listed out in full detail with plenty of explanation. And I think that there's a lot there that you can learn at your own pace as you work through it. One thing that I really want to mention, though, is that with urge surfing, you need to make sure that if you are practicing it on the go and you feel those sensations arise, it's perfectly fine to use it. But if you're practicing urge surfing and you're not particularly feeling any cravings at the moment, you need to make sure that you're in a safe and comfortable environment where you're not in risk of relapse. And the reason for this is that going through this exercise can bring up some of these cravings and these feelings in an uncomfortable way that may be difficult to deal with. But nonetheless, urge surfing is a really powerful tool. I found so much benefit in using it, and it really emphasizes the core elements of mindfulness to just let go and non-judgmentally observe experiences as they arise instead of involving yourself in them. Now, if you are in desperate need of professional help in recovering from your addiction, I really encourage you to reach out to the National Helpline at 1-800-662-HELP. And this helpline is open 24/7 and 365 days a year to help you find immediate help and referral for treatment and recovery near you, no matter your situation. Again, if you're really struggling and you need that help, I really encourage you to reach out to that. Otherwise, I really hope that today's episode was informative and helpful for you. Addiction is a scary thing, and we can always use more help. Just know that you're not alone, and if you are facing addiction, you can get better and you can work through it. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode, guys. Again, I really encourage you to go check out the blog article, "Can Mindfulness Help with Addiction?" for more information and a little more of a detailed guide on how to use urge surfing. Otherwise, please, if you liked today's episode, give it a thumbs up, like it, comment on it, whatever it is that you do. Don't forget that you can also like and follow Meditative Aiden on Instagram and Facebook for daily advice and snippets. You can also check out the YouTube channel, Meditative Aiden, for, you know, just YouTube videos, because that's what's on YouTube. Anyways, I hope you guys enjoyed it, and I'll see you guys next time.